It is my and our utter pleasure today to welcome Helen Veran. Thank you, Helen, that you have taken your time. It's wonderful that you can be here with us today and join us for this conversation. Helen Veran is one of the most renowned voices within postcolonial and global science and technology studies. A few years ago, she started to transfer and translate her insights, which she developed within the framework of postcolonial science and technology studies, into the current debates on decentering or decolonizing Western museums. The main issue maybe is how very different forms of gaining knowledge and producing knowledge in museums can be taken seriously. How the museum's Eurocentric bias and the museum's Western, Northern ordering can be irritated or broken up, and how executing the capacity for producing disconcertment may be an important function of Western museums today. These are not trivial concerns. Maybe we'll start, Helen, with the question, what experiences and concerns catapulted you into the engagement with museums? And what you actually mean when you say and write that museums should be places of disconcernment, that the ontological should happen in them.
Museum curators want visitors to come in and feel things, but I want people to come into museums and have feelings about their knowing and knowledge and being... And trusting that they don't know what's going on and feeling comfortable with that feeling of, I have no idea what to make of this. But then going the next step and saying, but let me hang around. There must be something here. So this idea of feeling about having feelings about our knowing, and so that we're quite comfortable with not knowing, but also that we get very uncomfortable when we feel we do know, and particularly when we feel we know in ways better than other people. And so that feeling of superiority, which is in a way engendered in scientific knowing, that this is something to worry about. I worry about epistemics getting left behind, partly because epistemics chooses so often to be left behind, and we don't give our students the means to talk about their own epistemics. And you know, when you start, they say, "Oh, I don't know anything about philosophy," as if that's all right. Okay, you don't have to know about philosophy, but you do have to know about knowledge and knowing, and what sort of knower you are. And so on.
To come back to this idea, how is it possible to encounter what is called an object or an artwork in the museum without prior classification and without prior, you know, orderings or something?
Yeah.
Is that like? Unlearning imperialism, as Ariela Azoulay has framed it lately? Is it unlearning your own society?
You need to experience the object before the category. Now, this is really not unlearning. It's quite hard. I actually learnt about the possibility of doing it from young Yoruba bilingual children, being very helpful, kind children, explaining to me how they could think in Yoruba about their learning to measure in English. And they were absolutely delighted by this possibility that they could do this. Mm-hmm. They could also think and talk in English about their learning to measure in Yoruba. And mm-hmm. they could explain very well how they were different and what fun it was to try to connect between this. So this is a domain of experiential knowing. I think those who know in two radically different languages, and having met this in Yoruba, not only children, of course, but also in Yoruba adults, there's some profound relearnings. Not that we need to forget the other sort of empiricist learning, that can be useful, but we need to do some really profound knowledge work, and museums are beautiful places to do it because they've collected all these. They're a place of the multiverse. That's what they're meant to be. I think this is why the museums are so. I'm so thrilled to be working in museums and thinking through museums, because they have this multiverse in them, and so I can bring this what I'm calling experientialism, mm-hmm. Into museums and see how it works.
I think maybe you can give the audience some more ideas what your critique. I mean, you also enjoyed the exhibition at the Bode Museum, you're right, but you also have an important critique of what kind of possibilities were not realized in that exhibition. Maybe you can say a bit more on that.
I was both thrilled by the it was called Beyond Compare. The mm-hmm. title was peculiarly inappropriate because mm-hmm. the exhibition was comparative through and through and through and through. Well, the first thing that alarmed me was the way in which the museum, the organization itself, was placed right at the core. The very first display you came across displayed the museum and the museum techniques and so on. I suppose that this was some sort of misplaced ideal of reflexivity. Oh, here we are. We are critiquing our past practices, but now we know better. This old familiar trope of, oh, we used to think this, but now we think this. That was right through. Mm-hmm. We were ashamed to be of what we did in the past, but now we do it properly, as if that solved all the problem. This is the way science promotes itself. Mm-hmm. So that was one, self-indulgence, mm-hmm. I think. The second was, and I think this is more significant, that the exhibition didn't respect the artworks as themselves. So that this and so then I began to wonder about the museum and its approach to its own European artworks, and looking at that, I could see, oh, it doesn't respect these beautiful objects that come from European past cosmologies, or they're only displayed as a mere step towards the, you know, the grand modern cosmology of time and space. And then the third thing that I worried about was, if you'd looked at the way the displays happened, sometimes the artworks got to sing almost despite all this rational empirical thinking and empirical thinking, all the universalism that goes right through the ethos, if you like, of that museum. And I thought not only are the artworks and what they do and what they and the collectives that they express, the human collectives that they express, not respected, but the people who make the displays, they know something that they don't know they know. So I think that this experientialism is something that curators have developed, but it never makes it onto the formal agenda of the institution. It remains as mere know-how, and this goes back to this inadequate picture of the modern knower as having this abyss between the knower in the text, the display, and the knower in the flesh. So it was those three shocks, I think, that here is a museum, here is a place where you think it might have done better than this.
Yeah. But what does it mean? Here we have this exhibition in the Bode Museum, Beyond Compare, developed by two very careful, critically engaged curators, with the best of intentions to decenter Western perceptions. And the result is not what we would have hoped for or expected or wished. What does it mean? Does it mean you cannot do this kind of work, whatever you concretely mean with decentering alone? Do you need a socialization in very different society like yourself have undergone to be able to see that? Or do you really need intense collaboration with other epistemological and ontical practices to be able to do that? Is that the lesson we get from that? Or what kind of lesson do we get from that? Somehow very nice, but somehow also failed experiment.
Yes, I think that is part of it, that to decenter is it's far more than a D. It's a and it's not as if you have to make other centers. It has the center has to not hold. That's the point. And you know, we're used to saying, "Oh, the center doesn't hold," as if that is bad. No, it really is how to make this eversion happen. How to pull what was inside, how to get it to the outside. And so this, you need an ethos of dissensus, dissensus. And so I think the curators in the Bode over 100 years or more have made this ethos and they've made it around achieving consensus. No, what you have to do is foster dissensus, generative dissensus. This is not dissension. And see, this is what we're getting now with the Humboldt Forum. We're getting dissension, not dissensus. So it's not turning out to be generative. It's having counterproductive effects. And so, yes, this openness, a decentering is an active openness, an active cultivation or nurturing of all those who don't agree, even though those many who don't agree, we end up having a conversation about what it is we don't know, but that's all right. It's having the conversation. And if you're committed to going on together, always beginning in difference, always being suspicious of sameness, which is this curating concept, is what we need to do. So it's an entirely different ethos that needs to be cultivated.
I would once more like to go back to the idea of the ontic and what you mean with the ontological happening in the museum. And let me say that some people are afraid of these words. Words like the ontic and the epistemic, and they feel unsure. And I could even include myself. I haven't learned any philosophy in my long life. So I'm not so sure if I know what you mean with that. Could you try to once more explain why that for you are important concepts, and what you want to say to those concerned about the decentering of the museum when you use them?
We have little option but to turn to the objects themselves. We have to let the this is a real challenge for an empirical approach to knowing an object that has lost stories, has lost the words that go with it. So it's not like to get the ethos, it's not like to go back. They already changed their ontic and ontological status by being picked up, wrapped up in paper to get them into boxes, and then all the boxes into ships, no doubt, and then out of boxes and so on. So all that doing and packing and organizing and labeling and so on, this changes their ontological status. They were one thing, they became another. And in a way it is sad that stories were left behind, but it doesn't mean they can't get stories again. So it's a matter of working with the objects, helping them to make new stories. So it's about being generative. Not all objects will be able to participate, but it's not only humans that are part of this new ethos that we need to work towards, and it's. So it is actually inventing new knowledge communities as and respecting novelty
Elaine, I'm sorry. This is very from a perspective from a maker. I'm an exhibition maker, and so every time when you speak, I ask myself, so how to translate your thoughts, and I like it very much. And so when you speak about the idea to turn to the objects themselves or to make them re-happen, mm-hmm. I have the feeling then that when we want to make them re-happen, the only possibility is to turn them, to send them back. Is it possible? So is to make them re-happen, is it possible without restitution or repatriation?
I think it is, actually. And I'm thinking of a particular work that was collected by this economic anthropologist who managed to completely miss all the economic work of women, I might say, in Yolngu, happening of the Yolngu economy. But what was negotiated with one particular object was that a group of young people should make an object, you know, in their place that they thought spoke to this museum object. And so then the museum got a new, completely different object and created a conversation between the young people, the curators, the gallery, and the objects to make an entirely new sort of display that involved phone screens and all sorts of things. And a lot of the young people from the community that had been involved, they got certificates of being able to participate in gallery work, lighting, and so on. So the community was extremely pleased. They got their young people trained with training certificates. In Australia, we have a whole series of training certificates that are workplace based. The gallery was extremely pleased. It got an entirely new idea about what objects are, can be, that used mobile phones and screens and lurid forms of and so on. So yeah, it is possible. Sending things back home to back home or back where they came from is certainly not the only option, and sometimes not a good option at all.